T-minus 3, 2, 1, 0.
Hey, my friends, welcome to the Launch Sequence Podcast, episode 150. Yay. There's no significance to that. It's just another number, but you know, it's a nice round number. I like it. It's cool. Today, we're going to talk about a pretty exciting topic. One of the biggest features in Star Citizen, something they've been working on for a while, and it's going to change the game in quite a big way, but it's only coming to Arena Commander in 323. We don't quite know what's going to come when it's going to come to the rest of the game, but it's highly anticipated, and my friend Loudguns here, he's done some talking on it. I know you love to focus on some ships and the gameplay inside of them, so I wanted to bring you on, and we could talk about like the details of this gameplay, but also how it's going to affect solo players, because I think they're really concerned when it comes to what's going to happen when, you know, my ship's getting broken down or experiencing glitches. So thank you for joining me for the talk today. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great, thanks, and congratulations on 150 episodes. I didn't realize I was on a special anniversary show.
Yay.
You might say it's just a number. I'm gonna say it's incredibly special.
So, oh, I mean, it's special because you're here. Screw the number.
But yeah, engineering gameplay looks really interesting. And yeah. I think there are a lot of things in Star Citizen where there's a concern that it might be the end for solo play. Which I
completely
think
ending.
Agree
just gone.
Is probably overhyped.
No solo gameplay anymore.
Yeah, just no, have to find a massive friends list.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be interesting. I'm looking forward to getting into the details on that. But before we get really into things, I kind of just want to know, how have you been feeling about Star Citizen lately?
Yeah, I've been feeling pretty good about it recently. But I think particularly a lot of it is the excitement for 323. So 322's been a good patch, been having a good time. Particularly more in the aspect of treating it as a sandbox and finding fun things to do with the org, with the community. But 323 looks like it's sort of the delivery point for a lot of that exciting stuff we saw last year at CitizenCon. So there's so much to be hyped for, but I don't know, as somebody who spends a lot of time setting up things for big events, I'm just really looking forward to a personal hangar.
Yes.
So I don't have to go down to a Platinum Bay on Aerial and load up a bunch of STVs into a CT.
Being able to store things at the hangar and just have your folks come in and get whatever supplies they need, armor, weapons, whatever, but also being able to get vehicles at the hangars. Oh man,
yeah,
that's gonna be nice.
That will be absolutely huge. So, and I think it's a really good step forward. Makes it feel more like an MMO,
yeah.
Frankly, it's sort of a first step. Even if it's quite a baby step, it's a first step on the road to things like player housing.
Oh, yeah.
It's always been just such a critical part of MMOs and a lot of RPG-type games for me. So,
yeah, now they start combining this the persistence of these hangars with the interior buildings that they're the building interiors they're working on in Montreal. And yeah, we get apartments in the game. We start having residences in different planets. That's when cosmetics can really start taking off too. the hangars are cool. 323 is feeling really good. I think many people might be surprised at how many of the features were initially stated to be in 323 that are now looking like they're going to make the cut. It's a lot of times people are used to, you know, features falling off throughout the months before. But I think they've added more than they've taken off this time.
Yeah, it certainly seems to be surprising on the upside, which is not par for the course. So, one thing that I did drop into the Eva Carti build, which you're now allowed to talk about, which is amazing. And it just made me realize I've done a little bit of master modes in sort of Arena Commander, but now having to, it might be a little case of learning to fly again.
So,
I almost splattered on the first space station I came to.
Do you like it?
I think so. And it didn't actually splat, so I didn't crash.
Okay, so
that's a good start.
Good feedback.
But I think it'll be really interesting to see master modes in the I know a lot of the context of the discussion has been around combat. But it'll be interesting to see how how a different flight model affects a whole lot of other aspects of the game.
Right.
You know, I spend more of my time on average doing like industrial gameplay. So, and there really haven't been any videos about sort of master modes in the context of a industry player or a cargo player. So,
right.
So it'd be interesting to see.
I think just a lot of it is because we just haven't been able to experience it ourselves in those ships. You know, it's one thing to speculate about how it'll go, but how does an industrial ambush go when you're in a Caterpillar and they're in two Arrows? It's hard to like just talk about that. And I am interested in seeing how it affects the rest of the game too. The side of master modes I'm more excited about though doesn't get any talk. The quantum boost stuff, the actual navigation stuff. I'm like, where's the, give me the fun movement in game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So 323 is feeling good for you. How were you feeling this time last year?
It's hard to almost cast my mind back. I think as we were chatting before the show, this
way
is
back in the day.
This is the busiest time my real life gets in real life work.
Mm-hmm.
So this is quite often the time I find myself playing the least Star Citizen, or in fact any games. As my real job heats up. So contrary to popular belief, I do have to have two jobs to make this work. So yeah, it's
I feel like that. Well okay, let's say then, how are you feeling mid year last year?
Yeah, I think there's always typically a bit of a mid year lull, isn't there? I think it coincides with, you know, standard holiday season, but there's always a bit of a time sort of in the middle of the year where, you know, we got the CitizenCon details earlier this week of like, mm-hmm. sort of they announced when the tickets are going on sale. But there's always a little bit of like a cooling off period. And I do sort of wonder whether we're going to get this amazing 323 patch with lots and lots of features and maybe some more coming in 323.x type patches. But then whether we might not see a bit of a quieter year after that in the build up to CitizenCon, because they do always hold back and save some stuff, if you know what I mean.
Can it be quiet though? Look at how hardcore they've gone on like slowly trickling out the hype for 323.
Yeah.
Do you think they could do that again for 4.0, or do you think they're going to try and keep it closer to the chest just because of the nature of the patch?
I think maybe for a 4.0 patch, you might see things a bit closer to the chest. It's, you know, you saw all the hype around sort of the Pyro Playground stuff. But that said, I mean, we'll probably see more of that sort of little bits of Pyro coming out. So I always forget the name of the extra test universe that we have, which we put Pyro into.
Technical preview channel.
That's it. So I think with that we might get a bit of a preview of these things. So if they want to test them properly, it's hard not to signpost what could be big announcements. So to be fair, maybe there's just a bit of a different scope in terms of speed of development now, because clearly a lot of developers have moved back over from Squadron.
Mm-hmm.
And if 323 is, and it's hard to work out, is 323 just a random bump with a lot of content, or is it representative of a bit of a change in terms of the speed of development? So I guess we'll see with 324 if we get a 324 or indeed 4.0. So
it's definitely an ongoing question in the community. Is this all of that work that they've been doing in Squadron just kind of all coming at once and catching us up, and it'll go back to normal after 323, or is this indicative of the pace going forward? I think it's the latter, to be honest. I think
certainly hope so.
I don't think, because like look at all the starting points of all these systems. They're not really things that just started last year or even the year before. Like we saw engineering in 2021. They were talking about the star map in 2019. Distribution centers were like 2022. CitizenCon, UGFs, like there's just a lot of stuff here that's multi-year initiatives, and it doesn't feel like they just started it a couple quarters ago. So, you know, It's also taking into account that there are features they haven't been talking about that we know they've been working on, like bounty hunting, asteroid locations, hacking. So I think in terms of like the polish that we're seeing with the FPS systems, it does feel like it could be a big push of this patch. But in terms of the significance of the features we're getting, I think this is going to be the way it is now.
Absolutely. And I think there's also the element of certain tech hurdles maybe blocked bigger development on other aspects of this. Yeah. There's no point necessarily putting certain stuff in and getting a finalized version of it if you don't have your flight model finalized, or if you don't have your you don't have things like server meshing actively being tested and understand how those things are going to work. So yeah, I mean, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. This is
fingers and toes. Everything's crossed. Yeah, it's an exciting time, no doubt. Confusing but exciting. Who knows what's going to be happening by the end of the year? I do think, though, we can assume multi-crew gameplay is going to be quite a bit different. How about we talk about that?
Absolutely. So
let's start by talking about the difference between solo gameplay and multi-crew gameplay. Because you can kind of just solo any ship, right? There is no difference between the ship types in the game right now. Would you say that?
Yeah, it's like how big's your cargo hold, basically.
Yeah.
So if you looking at traders sort of in particular, it's literally just, yeah, you might start in something small like a freelancer, but everybody gravitates towards a C2 because there's nothing stopping them.
Right.
Yeah. So nobody gravitates to a whole C because you can't use it properly, but if you could, then they would.
Like, man, we tried to get out a whole seat the other day, and I couldn't even get into the docking port. I was just stuck in the space station.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you could define what is currently multi-crew gameplay in Star Citizen?
There are a number of ships which are fun to multi-crew, but it's the game isn't pushing you in that direction. Like, it's very definitely not meta. So things like crewing a fully crewed hammerhead is a lot of fun. You know, if you get sort of four or five turret gunners alongside the pilot, you know, it feels a bit bad sticking somebody into that rear tail gun seat where they don't get to do very much. but yeah, if you get a good few of you onto a ship like a hammerhead or a redeemer or a Carrick, you know, there's a lot of fun that you can have rocking around the verse with your friends. But it's not necessarily, it's not meta. It's, you know, 9 times out of 10, you would be better off in, you know, either all in your own ship, or maybe in some smaller, like, heavy fighters with one turret on them. You know, just the maths of the DPS, you know, you would be outputting more DPS and you would be not a juicy big target.
Yeah.
You know, if your one hammerhead gets taken out, then that is all 6 or 7 of you down. Whereas if you come in 4 vanguards with turrets, then one of them gets blown up, then that's only 2 out of 8 of you. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of the maths of multi-crew doesn't really stack up at the moment. And I think there was a comment that John Crew made a little while ago when he was talking about multi-crew gameplay in the future, particularly with relation to capital ships, that was. And he sort of said, we don't want to put capital ships into the game if it's just going to feel like a bigger canoe.
Right.
I just always really liked that term for it because, yeah, at the end of the day, sort of a hammerhead right now, yeah, it's got more turrets on it, but it's not really any different, so to speak, than a Vanguard. It's a ship with a pilot and some turrets that you can fit inside. And there's nothing really different system-wise going on in the bigger ships than in the small ships.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's about to change.
Yeah.
That's what we're discussing today.
So you're kind of getting at the resource network, which is what they were calling this all before they came up with engineering gameplay. And the resource network, I think the coolest part about it is it's something they want to put in like the cities and outposts and space stations too. But in ships, at least what it sounds like you're getting at is that this network of resources is used to make each ship actually function differently rather than just being a different set of numbers or statistics. Let's see. Let's talk about what each of those resources is. Or not what each one is, but rather what's important, you think, to a ship like a Hammerhead, and how does that change when you do have to start considering resources? So you've got gravity, coolant, you got to worry about heat, actual power, life support, like, and fuel. How do you think adding all of those things to the Hammerhead does change it from just being that set of turrets? At least, you know, and this is heavy speculation, kind of what you imagine, but we've watched enough of their presentations on this to kind of theorize.
Well, I think possibly one of the things which will really start to separate out the bigger ships versus the smaller ones is that they'll be that bit harder to kill. So they won't, because time to kill is on average intended to go up. Yeah, we've already had it to some degree with soft death as opposed to going straight to, you know, everything just goes boom.
Yeah.
But I'd imagine that will, you know, you'll get that element of things will go wrong before they go catastrophically wrong.
Yeah, they kind of talk about you not even blowing up really in the future, right? Mm-hmm. You just kind of disintegrate, you just break apart by components and parts.
Yeah, and I think you might get those scenarios, mind you, where, you know, a critical part, it's the old Star Trek trope of, the reactor going critical, which it seems to every two episodes.
Yeah, so, they should protect that thing better.
Probably safety people at the Star Trek Federation really need a talking to. But I think on the bigger ships, you probably have less chance of that critical failure. And on the other hand, you know, if you sort of think about it, I guess in more realistic terms, and I'm always very cautious about getting too much into the realism, because I always like to kick myself and remind myself Star Citizen's a game, and games should be designed to be fun, and that's not necessarily to make everything realistic. But looking at real ships, you know, if a part of a ship floods, then a bigger ship has the opportunity to, you know, close bulkheads, contain that damage, you know, be that a fire, be that flooding. So I think on the bigger ships you'll probably have more ability to contain something which might lead to a critical failure. And you'll probably also, you know, I wouldn't underestimate the fact that something like a Hammerhead has a cargo room, whereas something like a Vanguard doesn't. So with regard to that, you know, you can bring spare parts, you can bring maybe spare resources if things like, you know, does coolant come in a box? If we run out of coolant, can we plug some more in, for want of a better term?
Yeah.
Whereas if we're in a fighter, we can't do that.
It really starts to emphasize the longer distance gameplay in this game, which I guess we haven't really experienced, because there's just, you can go anywhere in Stanton and you're near civilization.
Absolutely.
Yeah, being able to actually store components in your ship would be really important. There are some ships that do have multi-crew roles, right? Like, there are a couple applications where we actually can do multiple people on a ship and it makes sense, like mining and stuff. Are there any others you can think of, though? I'm just thinking of, like, the Mole. But are there any others in the game right now that actually call for more than one person to be on the ship for it to be most effective? Besides, like, a turret gunner?
Yeah, currently it's mostly sort of in terms of actually using them, it would be things like the mining ships, like the Mole, and the salvage ships, like the Reclaimer. Mm-hmm. You know, you can feasibly solo a Reclaimer, but it's so slow and so dull that I wouldn't recommend anyone does. I would argue, sort of particularly when it comes to turrets, to a degree, trading ships would be one of those which I would say this is kind of very rewarding for multi-crew gameplay, because particularly as turrets get stronger, sort of the deterrence factor, if a group of pirates do happen to come across you at a trading outpost and you've just loaded up, and then they start firing at you, but you start firing back with two turrets, It's just a, I think more people should be trading like that, frankly. Mm-hmm. And I think sort of particularly when we get into physically having to move cargo, that will become even more and more common. So, you know, you won't be going and doing your 696 SU runs in your C2 without at least a buddy to help with the tractor beaming. Would be my theory there.
Yeah, that's really going to start breaking up the gameplay too. It'll be interesting to see how many people are actually interested in being that buddy that just kind of sits on board and goes to lift those boxes. But then you can kind of work two jobs, right? You could be the turret gunner, the engineer when things go wrong, and the person who's unloading boxes if that's just what you decide to do. That's kind of the nice part about this is there's not like a skill tree you have to follow to be able to be an engineer. You can just pick up a tractor beam and start moving components if you want.
Yeah, and that's quite a huge sort of difference in SC, really, with the lack of sort of these skills, sort of artificial gates on what you can and can't do. It's really down to the skill you've built up, whether you've learned those gameplay loops. And I think that's sort of where it's very important to make sure that these gameplay loops actually have differences to them and different gameplay mechanics that you need to learn and be good at so that there's a difference between somebody who's an expert at something and somebody who is a bit of a jack of all trades, both of which are good options. I'm sure you haven't scared Tomato off.
No, you guys know how it is. Call to prayer over here. Got to close the window real quick. It really does mix up how this game works when, you know, we have so many conversations about things. Honestly, Master Modes, I think, is a really good example. We were talking about Master Modes before this show started. We've talked about it on the show quite a few times, but it's a small piece in a really big puzzle that has things like engineering, physical armor, the Maelstrom system, repair gameplay, NPCs that can be hired as crew, a lot of stuff that can kind of shift the dynamic of what's important in the game. And I think this whole thing, engineering, introducing this multi-crew, is a really big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think
it's worth touching, because we didn't mention, so when we were talking about differences with big ships versus small ships going forward, physical armor is one which we would get picked up on if we didn't mention. And I think that does really change the dynamics of sort of a hammerhead versus a fighter, or particularly as you go bigger. So that's the other thing which is still to really get worked out, that will change those dynamics of rock, paper, scissors in terms of ship combat.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting balance, because I think, and we're about to talk about this, I think engineering is seen very much as a debuff to big ships. You know, oh, you can't be as effective in big ships. Big ships won't work as well with less people. People see it as a way to control those big ships. But then you get armor, which basically is emphasizing the fact that small ships can't damage those big ships. And the way those two balance out will be interesting to watch as well, because like there's a whole bunch of talk when it comes to pay to get advantage when it comes into big ships having more advantages like that. And you know, not to say that is some kind of an advantage that people are paying for, but that's just another podcast. But there's a lot to consider when talking about this engineering stuff.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the actual things in the engineering, or rather engineering as a whole, because we've been dancing around what it is. Do you think we can do a pretty good job of just running, like summarizing everything we've seen so far from the three different types of engineering to what actually people are supposed to do when they're taking part in this stuff?
Yeah, I hope so. Hope my memory of CitizenCon is not as faulty as it could be.
let's start off with, I guess let's go through like the chronological order of how an engineer might work. So the first part of engineering would be the tuning. And they haven't actually told us much about that, but do you have any kind of ideas of what that could mean?
Yeah, I think I think there's a lot of room for a really interesting gameplay loop here. And it's more like sort of historically you know, when you were able to just overclock parts, and you just sort of sit in your ship and just, you know, just go, well, I'm just going to turn that up. But that might be going back to sort of 313. I think the role of sort of a tuner is somebody who sits basically back at your base, or, you know, it might be on a carrier, something like a Kraken, working on ships, which before they even go out. So, you know, fighter pilots have got their Gladiuses or Arrows sort of at the ready in the hangar, and your tuner is going round, and they're the person trying to get the most out of the parts. And we might have to sort of be contending with things like wear and tear in parts in the future. So it might be there that they're trying to calibrate parts which are maybe not at 100% to try and get the most performance out of them, with the potential to maybe over-tune parts so that they can deliver, you know, the very simple example of a shield part. You know, it might have 1,000 hit points of HP. Maybe with good tuning, that engineer can get it to 1,100, the same part, in optimum conditions.
That would be cool.
It's then, though, how do you make that gameplay enjoyable gameplay to do?
Yeah.
And that's really over to game designers. But
how do you make overclocking fun?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I like that idea that you can kind of permanently overclock a part, at least for, you know, maybe like 2 hours or an hour or something like that. And you can only do it with certain equipment that's maybe just in hangars or something like that. I also love the idea of the larger components are, the more complex the startup sequence is. So if you, as a tuner, you get out to the hangar before your crew, maybe you all are running like a hammerhead, you get out there before your crew and you run the startup sequence, which takes 2 minutes, right? It doesn't have to be something crazy. It takes a minute, 2 minutes, I don't know. And because you ran through it like that, you get a little bit of a buff. Maybe your ship, just like your power supply is running a little bit more efficient or something like that, as opposed to just kind of going out and starting the ship up. It's that sort of like, here, we'll reward you for the planning and we'll give you, it's somebody's job to be able to do this. But again, then you run into that whole idea of how do you make that fun?
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, and I think it's one of the things which does come up with engineering gameplay a lot. Different things are fun to different people. That's one of the great things about SC more generally.
Yeah.
And there will be some people who, you know, there'll probably be some crews where it'll be like, I'm not sure if this example is going to translate, but when you're playing five-a-side football here in the UK, you know, on some teams, you just take it in turn to go in goal. And it's basically like when somebody lets one in, then that's the end of your turn. And usually those are teams that don't do very well because you're almost incentivized to let a goal
in
so you can get out and run around a bit.
Yeah.
But then there are other teams where, you know, somebody turns up and he or she's got their own goalie gloves and they're ready to be in all game. So I think some crews like that will have dedicated engineers for whom this is exactly the type of gameplay that they're craving, whereas other crews, it might not be our favorite part, but we'll take it in turns to be the engineer.
Yeah, that's like the double-edged sword of this game is this might be too idealistic, but the idea that you build a game with so many different styles of gameplay and you want to build them deep enough for people to get a ton of gameplay out of them, they have to be not fun to some people because we have to depend on some people to do the things we don't want to do or else they'll never get that gameplay. Like imagine if flying ships was just so much better than everything else that nobody wanted to do anything but fly the ship and then everybody's just fighting over the pilot seat. That's not the game we signed up for.
Yeah, exactly. But I think how they're approaching, I know it's a different area, but how they're approaching the cargo is maybe sort of speaks to how they'll look to do the same sort of approach they'll take to engineering. So the concept of like you can hand load cargo and do it all yourself, or you can pay effectively a penalty of time and money to have the AI do it for you. And that also sort of speaks to the fact that the AI won't do it as well as you could.
Yeah.
you know, because in order for that to be effective, they're going to have to price it and time it so that a good group of cargo loaders on the human side could load that ship quicker and more efficiently. So yeah, I think maybe it'll be the same for the engineering. Sort of, if you really want to avoid this, you can pay a fee, and give up time. You know, maybe your ship will be unavailable for that time. But on the other hand, that tuning would, you know, to take the tuning as an example, you know, you could maybe pay for a pre-flight tune, but it would never be quite as good. You'd never quite achieve the levels that a player engaging in this gameplay loop who was very good at it could achieve.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like an option on the menu. You can just choose and it gives you like 50% of what you could have gotten. There's also the aspect of different odd items in the game. We're always talking about there's, you know, what are we going to loot? What's that unique thing I'm going to find? Maybe components with additional. I don't want to get into the whole plus 2% power kind of thing, but we have a bunch of components that compare against each other. Who's to say there's not a component that maybe is less glitch prone, right? That you might not want to put in the work of engineering. So instead you pay extra for a power plant that can't put out as much power, but also doesn't run into as many glitches and stuff. That's how we do it in the real world. You gotta, sometimes you choose the Toyota, sometimes you choose the BMW. Which one's gonna last longer?
Yeah, so like durability is a stat in a lot of games. It's sort of an important one. Like I played a lot of survival games. That's more of my background. And when you find certain tools, they might be deemed higher grades, but based on a variety of stats. So, you know, attack damage or... But durability is a key stat. And quite often, sort of particularly if you find harvesting tools, high durability is one of the best stats to achieve. So
yeah. It's also more stuff to craft.
Exactly.
Who doesn't want more stuff to craft, guys? Come on. All right. So that's the tuner. And like I said, we don't know much info about that. So that was just a lot of us talking about what it could be. But we know a ton about the mechanic. It's like the most active role, it feels like, that they've introduced so far. Give a little breakdown of the basics of what you've seen from this role.
Yeah, so this seems to be sort of when you're actually in flight, actively running around the ship and fixing stuff, which fixing stuff seems to have mostly been beaming it based on the presentations that I've seen. But I'm hoping that that's almost placeholder gameplay and there's more to it than that. I'd really like to see some variety around that role, sort of knowing this part is broken, therefore we need this part to fix it.
It seemed like what they've been showing us over the years was the idea that components were going to have subcomponents inside them, and then those subcomponents would have to be replaced. But it does also seem kind of like they've scrapped that idea and just gone with this, the fuses.
Yeah.
So there is the idea of replacing fuses, and that seems more related to power than just components. Expand a little bit more on what you mean, though. Like, you want to see just different tools in the game, or what?
Yeah, or even different mini-games. So one of the reasons I think mining works and is fun and engaging, sort of at least for me, is that mini game of sort of, you know, balancing the green, your laser's charge power into that green zone and holding it there, and all of the various sort of gadgets and consumables and all that sort of stuff that you can do to impact how your laser functions, makes it an engaging gameplay loop. And sometimes, you know, particularly with the changes they've made recently, where different rocks have different resistances and instabilities.
Yeah.
You know, if you get into multi-crew mining, then it does become sort of a case of like, you might actually have sort of four or five people sat round, not even just lasering the rock, but talking about the best way to laser this rock. You know, what gadgets should we use for this one? What consumables should we use in this?
Yeah.
In this order. I'm not saying just, you know, do the same minigame for engineering.
I'm trying to mine my components.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying that compared to, and I know it's placeholder gameplay, but, you know, it's fun to make credits, but the Reclaimer's structural salvage right now is dull. It's boring. You click your left mouse button and you wait. You know, if you're the claw operator, I don't fully accept that. It's just placeholder gameplay. But going around and using a healing laser beam on components does kind of feel like that. It feels like it would be fun in terms of the coordination between sort of the I've forgotten the name for it, the sort of person who's in charge, the manager,
yeah,
and the mechanics themselves. Sort of, you know, that there's that fun element of, you know, it's this part, and maybe providing them with a guide on where on the ship they need to go. But if then when they get there, it is literally just like, I've got my multi-tool, point, click, hold. It could just get a little bit boring.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
So I suppose maybe just some having different, maybe a few different types of tool that you need to apply to different problems, sort of different natures of failures. So you'll sort of identify what type of mechanical failure it is based on a HUD readout, then match that to the appropriate tool, use the right tool, maybe play some form of skill-based minigame. I think that's really where I come from, that skill-based minigames are often what makes loops fun
yeah.
or not.
Yeah. And I think that design brief they shared on that a year ago, it did seem like he was saying there are different types of glitches you'll see. So I do hope that that's something they do, where they're like, okay, these are the glitches you're seeing. This is the stuff you have to do. But it's also, I feel like I kind of want to see how it plays, because between the fire extinguishers, you have to put out the fire, replacing mm-hmm. the fuses, replacing components, and then using the beam to repair components. Again, I'm not saying the beam is good enough, but between those four things, and then you spread that out across the ship where it might take 20 to 30 seconds to run across, it could get hectic, but that's just during combat. So for everything else where there's no combat, but there are still kind of like glitches and repairs that might need to be done occasionally, it definitely feels like there needs to be a little bit more than just a beam pointing to really sell that.
I think just adding a little bit of skill to it that doesn't maybe necessarily change, you know, if you've got your beam and your beam is doing the, if you get your beam onto that target, it is going to repair it over a certain amount of time. That's fine. But then if there's maybe a skill level, a skill-based minigame that goes within that, which you can use to speed it up, I think. But I think you're right. If you overcomplicate it too much, then you add getting shot at and having about five or six possible things that you need to be doing, then that could get too much if that gameplay is then, yeah, and it could get overwhelming to people who are just trying to get into it.
Yeah.
And then people just increasingly are like, no, I don't want to be the engineer.
Yeah. And it's interesting because that's like, that is what some people want. Some people mm-hmm. want less, some people more. And it's like, well, how far do they want to go? Because however far they want to go, it's definitely going to like have some people in either in the category of loving this or sort of push them away. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, though. I do think that they should do something more than just the beam. I think that, so that's almost everything that we talked about, but how about the fire? That's kind of included with the mechanic, I think, is putting out fires. When I start to see them putting out fires, it does really start to draw that comparison that I think a lot of people make of Sea of Thieves between mm-hmm. between how, you know, that works. You have to patch up holes and ditch out water. This is kind of like you got to repair components and put out fires. Are you excited for that kind of fire component? Do you think it might get out of hand? How do you think it balances into engineering?
Yeah, I think it's I think it's a really good addition to have, because it's particularly as something which you have multiple ways of solving. So you could solve it with a fire extinguisher, but you could also solve it by venting your ship. So having like optionality over how you deal with these things is really good. And I think the added level of danger on it sort of brings with it sort of the because on certain ships you're going to be absolutely fully crewed and have an engineering team, and then other people are going to run this option of just having, you know, if we need to do engineering, then we'll jump out of what we're doing at the time and pitch into that instead. So it brings in sort of, you know, you might not move because you've lost one cooler on your ship. You might not pull turret gunners off their posts for that. But if you've got a fire that started, that might be a, like, right, we need to, which of our turrets can we sacrifice? Because we need to sacrifice one of them, because we need to put that fire out before it gets out of hand. And we can't risk venting that part of the ship. So it's the thing is, though, particularly if it's a very dangerous sort of thing, if fire is, like, you know, let's just say sort of in the realm of how dangerous these mechanical failures are, sort of fire maybe ranks at the top of your worst case scenario list. It certainly looked that way in that footage of that reclaimer.
Shouldn't be something that just pops up.
that's the thing. Sort of it shouldn't be in every fight you're gonna have a fire to deal with.
That's also really important for this whole segment of gameplay. When we talk about this, we're talking about it as a concentrated idea. Like, when you talk about fighting in Star Citizen, it doesn't mean you're fighting every day. It doesn't mean you're running into people who are shooting you all the time. It's just a focus on that gameplay. Engineering gameplay is not gonna be, they know they're making a game, and they know that engineering still needs to be a feature that makes people be more careful, but also is still, like, interesting and fun. And I definitely think this could go too far and not be fun. And I don't think they're going to do that. From what you've seen so far, does it feel anywhere near too tedious?
I think the overall principle of it is really cool. I'm not too personally worried about the tedium of it, but I think that maybe comes from a, you know, speaking almost selfishly, coming from a perspective of being in a decent sized org. So I know that there are enough people in my org who are just so excited for this. You know, they're already bugging me. Sorry, bugging me is a terrible term. nicely requesting that we have an engineer role put in the Discord. You know, we have our roles sort of segregated into the type of gameplay that people most enjoy.
Yeah.
And some people are asking for engineer already. I'm like, well, you know, hold your order a little bit. Like, it's not actually in the game. But I know that there's people who are chomping at the bit to get into engineering. So I know that if I find it wildly tedious, then it'll be something which I'll have plenty of people who want to tune up whatever ship that we're going out in next. I can understand that if you are solo or if you're sort of in a small group and all of you are really into, like, you know, let's just say fighting, you just all want to get out there and pew pew, and right now you can fire up your ships and you can start pew pewing, then it might not have you over the moon to think about, you know, which one of you has to go in goal, basically.
All right, let's talk about that third and final role in engineering. Again, these aren't delineated lines. There's no skills or anything. This is just kind of how they've explained the profession. But we talked about the tuner. We've talked about the mechanic. Now we're on to the manager. And you mentioned this a little bit earlier. What is the manager doing?
Yeah, so it's they had that view of it from the console of the C2. So you'll have, and a lot of ships have an engineering station that I struggled to get out just there. But the interface to that looked really cool, particularly sort of building in with the current new map that they're working on to show all of the different areas of the ship, to show what's being problematic, where you've got issues. And also controlling some of the more macro systems, things like these, the resources like the oxygen, control the oxygen flow to the room, So you could maybe look at locking off a certain room, removing the oxygen, putting out the fire that way. But also, I think it would be really a role for a good communicator. It's where sort of communication is so important in any sort of multi-crew. Yeah, you have to be the person who is, you've got the bird's eye view of what's going wrong on the ship. So being able to direct your mechanics is hugely important.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool when you've got your pilot who's flying the ship, your engineer who's monitoring the ship, and then their captain who's actually ordering what happens with the ship, and you hear the communication back and forth between what they're doing and what's going on. Because that engineer is definitely going to have to call out to the other people in the crew, hey, we just lost this turret. Maybe we should fly not in that direction.
Yeah.
So you like the UI. I'm trying to remember. It's probably going to change a little bit from CitizenCon, huh? Because I think what they showed us looked a little bit unfinished.
Yeah. I hope it continues to get improved upon, but generally sort of having just looked at the Evo patch a little bit, the new map looks really good to me. So I hope it's just sort of built up off that.
Did you guys, they were trying to get a test out for engineering and arena commander for 323. That's kind of what brought on the idea to do the episode this week. Did that end up happening?
I honestly, my first time jumping into the Evo patch was actually last night. So I'd heard about this engineering test, but didn't manage to get in and take a look at it.
I'm looking for, man, it's crazy to think we're like days away possibly from this mechanic that we've been hearing about since I think October of 2020. Like that's when they really started to talk about it. It was 4 years ago almost. And we're finally getting to play it.
But I think putting it into Arena Commander is a fantastic idea. So because if you can sort of throw it at people and see how it is in sort of really high stress type situations.
Yeah.
And that's and allow testing where it doesn't really matter if it goes wrong, then that's going to be a fantastic way for us to test it out and learn.
Yeah. Hopefully that doesn't lead to the feedback skewing it more towards exciting moments. I imagine CIG themselves are very aware that that could happen. But, you know, it'd be good to know that the testing is also focusing on what happens in normal play. And I guess we won't really see that till it's in the PU.
Yeah. I think as well, sort of, it is one of those things where, I used to play a game called Atlas when it came out, which was, unfortunately, it died a death. But it was quite fun at the time. And one of the things which we don't have in SC at the moment, but we will have, is really long journey times. So sometimes in Atlas, you know, you would take a journey on which you were aware was going to take you sort of 3 hours of sailing, that sort of thing.
Oh, yes, I heard about this. They were talking about this the other day.
And it was quite fun having things to do on the ship during those 3 hours, rather than just, you know, taking it in turns to steer and watching Netflix. So, you know, you would have things that you could do, like to improve your sails, to repair your ship. So you'd be sort of sailing through battles, and you didn't fly in that game. You might sort of run into a couple of enemy ships. You might take a bit of damage, but win that fight and then sail on. But then while your captain was sailing on, then the rest of you would take that moment to get around and fix the ship. And I think sort of having this tuning and some standard repair work to sort of do, it might not seem brilliant right now, but if you're talking about, you know, your crew has to make a multi-system jump that's going to take you a good few hours, then actually that sort of regularized maintenance work might be quite fun.
Yeah.
To just do during the journey.
And it's also, how many things are they going to be adding to these ships? Arcade machines, we've got chess, and I'm not trying to say that people should get ready to like use board games to find Star Citizen entertaining, but item management, I hate to use this as an example, but they talk about soft skills, so maybe things like, I'm not even going to get into that, never mind, but like item management, maybe data bank management, figuring out, hopefully AC is something that we can access through sim pods and stuff. There's just a lot of probably ways that they can continue to make that process fun, as in addition to engineering. Gosh, yeah. The sun, I can't get away. So going back to the manager role, though, how involved does it see if the mechanic is the one running around repairing everything? Do you think the manager is actually going to have a lot to do?
I think it's good from a perspective of, you know, particularly if they can work this in, knowing that those two people should be working together, that it's a team working job. So, you know, maybe to a certain part, if the mechanic is going to repair it, the manager has to turn off the power to it, or the mechanic will get electrocuted, you know, or the mechanic can't see visually necessarily which of two similar looking parts are actually damaged as easily as if the manager sort of directs them specifically, you know, it's the shield generator on the left. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the other thing though is that particularly maybe on smaller ships where you have less distance to travel, these roles might be the same person. It might be a case of, you know, a single engineer does the manager and the mechanic role. They just go to the management desk. All right, okay, we've got an issue with cooler 2, which is, you know, take a mental note, the one in the back right. So right, I know where I'm going now. Off I go, sort of mechanic hat on.
I like that idea of cutting the power to that area. And going back to kind of your idea that the beams should be joined by other little mini games. Maybe you have to do something with the power coupling to the component when you get there as the mechanic. And if you try to do that thing before the person turns the power off, you get shocked. That's a good one. Calls for that teamwork, makes it so that you have to pay attention to multiple things if you are playing the same roles. And playing the same roles on smaller ships is kind of where we want to take this discussion, because really the big question I think a lot of people are having is, how is this going to affect them as a solo player? You're not, I guess you could be the manager, mechanic, and tuner in your solo ship, but do you think people are actually going to need to do that a lot? You think this is something that's going to make the solo gameplay just a complete drag for people now?
I think it's quite interesting that to look at some of the ships that CIG are releasing or have announced in the run-up to this. So things specifically, I'm thinking like the Spirits, and also the the Zeus series?
Yeah, the Zeus. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's cool and interesting that they've released a bunch of ships which are really good-looking 2 to 3 cruise ships. Because I think one of the biggest differences probably is that I think there's still plenty of room for solo players. I think it would be a terrible idea to shut solo players out of this game, because most MMOs, which if MMOs don't cater to the audience who like playing solo, then they tend to die. You know, those people who like playing solo, they are a huge, huge part of a potential audience for a game. Yeah. So, and games which are way too hardcore and don't allow solo players, they do tend to not last that long. So I think CIG is smart enough to know that. But I think what solo players might find is that, you know, maybe a C2 isn't your ship anymore. Maybe if you are dedicated to being a solo player, maybe you should give up hope on that Polaris. Or, you know, it's like that's a multi-crew ship that's going to take an org to run. Whereas what I would love to see out of CIG is just more of the same, more of these sort of smaller ships, like 2-3 player ships, maybe even some dedicated solo ships that are still premium, that are still better than starter ships. So it's not I think one of the best things they could do is get away from this sort of ranking of ships where it goes like starter, solo, then you advance, and advancement means increasing your crew size. It'd be great to see some sort of sideways motion where it's like your ship gets better because it's a better ship, it's got better parts, but it doesn't get better in terms of being just bigger and having more crew.
You know, it, it does feel kind of what you're saying. Oh my gosh. Kind of what you're saying. It does feel like that has been going on a little bit. Like the Siulin, I think, is a really good solo, solid sideways kind of ship. Things get a little more specialized when you get to the Hull A, but even something like the 100i is like, I think that's a really good ship to keep just because it has the refinery. It's got a bed, it's got cargo. You can actually take these smaller ships a really long way. And I fully agree with you. Making sure those ships are still valuable is going to be pretty key to making sure that this doesn't kill solo gameplay. Not that it will, but that I don't know that it doesn't. You want this to be something solo players need to deal with, but you also want people to be able to use ships that they know aren't going to have to deal with this stuff. And I think those smaller ships are definitely where that comes in. You know, you're running something that's the equivalent to a car today. It's not going to be experiencing a lot of trouble all the time because you're just flying it from A to B.
And I think the other sort of side of it as well is like preparation. You know, you might be, if you're intending to play solo, you might have to be a bit more responsible for your preparation. Yeah, you know, if you're driving your car and you know you're about to go and drive your car on a 5-hour journey, yeah, you know, you might want to check the oil first. So I think sort of for solo players, it'll be a case of, you know, either do that tuning or pay for the tuning to be done by NPCs before you set out on your trip. Or if you come back, pay your bills for repairing a ship. Whereas if somebody else in like a big org is flying around in a ship with a bunch of engineers on board, maybe they can afford to skip that step. They're just like, I don't know, power plant a bit wonky, we'll fix that on the way, let's get going, lads.
Yeah, it's kind of what we already do. You go and you get your ship repaired. If you could just say, if you get your ship repaired every time you land at a space station, you're never going to experience a glitch. But you know how we are, we forget about that stuff. And that's kind of where those things start to come up and where you probably want to make sure you know a little bit of the gameplay. So, I do think that at least in terms of how intrusive this would be, I wouldn't expect it to be worse than what we have right now, where you experience torque imbalance quite a bit. You might take damage and your thrusters might not work as well. You do have to get your ship repaired and basically anytime you go into battle. Obviously that stuff complicates, but it doesn't seem from what we've seen like they want engineering to be something that affects those smaller ships as much.
I'd also say so maybe it's going to be better than what we have now, even for players who aren't that interested in the loop, because it will mean that you can fix your problems. You know, right now, for example, like if you get a major torque imbalance, that's it. Your ship's flying wonky until you get it back to a space station. And sometimes that trip back to a space station is really painful when if you put too much thrust in, then you're going to spin in a circle. Now, right now, of course, like everybody just, not everybody, I've known some people to grin and bear it just for the RP. But a lot of people will just at that point just be like, well, blow up the ship.
Yep.
Back to base. Back to the station with me, or escape, exit to menu. But, you know, if you're intending to go on a solo expedition, sort of exploring somewhere, and if we have future systems like Death of a Spaceman, where it's gonna be an impact if you backspace, and when you escape and exit to menu, you're gonna log back in, you're gonna be in exactly the same spot in the same broken ship. You know, having the tools to be able to go, well, my ship's broken, but I prepared because I knew I was solo. And I can repair my ship, or I can put a call out to somebody who specializes in repairing ships. Space AA, please.
Stanton's AAA. That is it is gonna be something that helps people a lot. I think you're right about that, because the amount of times when you just have, like, if your ship is damaged cosmetically, it'd be nice to be able to fix it for like a picture or something instead of flying all the way back to a space station to repair it. And this is kind of ship repair. Like, we've been talking about how components will take damage and Ships won't actually explode. They'll kind of just be killed via component and by armor. And that shift to damage means this shift to engineering is kind of the real ship repair we've been waiting for, too. You basically be able to find a derelict ship and theoretically get it back up and running if you have the parts.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. This is sort of the start of that repair loop. I know there are some players in my orc who are equally desperate for that sort of to go and refuel people who have run out of fuel. Kind of the fuel rats gameplay from Elite Dangerous.
Yeah.
So sort of offering that AAA service, which obviously in the current state of the game, you know, it's a bit the same way that a lot of people don't use medical beacons, because it's like, well, you know, I'll just take the death and I'll go back and get my stuff myself. Or my stuff wasn't really valuable to me and there's no real penalty to dying, so I'll take my time back and just get on with my day. But I think in the future, sort of as these systems come in and as it's more important to try and keep yourself alive, there's a lot more gameplay for people who want to do, you know, medical, repair, refuel. I think sort of for the repair and refuel side, sort of engineering, it's really the start of that really coming online.
Yeah. Are you, let's see, what else do I have to ask you about this? I guess let's wrap up that idea about solo players and how they'll view this. Do you think it's going to end up being annoying?
Undoubtedly, somebody's going to find it annoying. You know, so
that's fair. Yeah.
I think for the most part, I don't think so, because the problem is if you know, CIG are trying to make a game that's challenging, but at the end of the day, fun. And also we have pretty great ways to give feedback to CIG. So, you know, if it's really not fun, then you
they know, will feed, know.
Feed that back.
Yeah, they're going to know on every platform there is.
The one thing I would say is if you find it really fun, feed that back too. Because there is always a bit of a danger, I think, that you know, the voices that say this suck end up being louder than the voices which say this is really good, because when people think something's really good, they're too busy cracking on and enjoying it to write a Spectrum post. So it's definitely worth sort of whatever your feedback is, giving that feedback. But I think it probably, even for solo players, you know, what's the reason a lot of people are playing solo? Yeah, because I've played MMOs solo and survival games solo, and a big part of it is the challenge of surviving on your own in a big scary world.
Yeah,
where lots of stuff's trying to kill you or get in your way. Like,
sounds like somebody's living in Pyro.
Maybe. But the thing is that, you know, I think this brings that extra little bit of challenge, and it's that thing that solo players have to think their way around. You know, right? I better take some spare parts. I'd better make sure my ship's all like nice and looked after. I'm going to invest in the better quality component.
Yeah,
with the higher durability that's less likely to start a fire.
These features, the engineering components, are becoming more important. The cargo system that we're getting, and I think whenever they start focusing on bed logging, it feels like these are kind of the pillars of that really long distance gameplay, where you're not even going to the deep pocket of a star system. I know everything that we've seen on the star map on the website, that's lore. It could always be, you know, changed for whatever reason. But have you seen the size of star systems in this game?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's like Stanton's a baby system.
Stanton is so small.
Yeah.
And we really do, you know, I think a lot of people assume that most of star systems will be the same size as Stanton, but some of them in lore are like 25 to 30 times the size of Stanton. And even then, there are space stations that just don't have civilization. So that idea of going out, having those components on hand, having all the food, all the fuel, all the ammo that you might need, you and friends might need for days, really starts to become more believable when you look at this sort of gameplay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's sort of the, you know, it brings in that sort of aspect of space exploration. There's a really great, and it can impact all sorts of gameplay loops as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an episode of Firefly, I think, where they're smuggling some contraband, and then they break down in the middle of nowhere, having purposely taken the route that puts them off the main trade lanes because they're smuggling contraband. And then for the sake of one little part, their ship's broken. Yeah, so it's like, it'll make people make those choices,
yeah.
which you don't have to worry about in the game right now.
And that's also good for missions. Just doing a cargo hauling mission mm-hmm. is fun. And some people might hate this, but the idea of doing a cargo hauling mission and having that possibility of maybe your ship breaks down, maybe you get attacked by a pirate, maybe you come across a distress beacon and decide to help, and that turns into a fetch quest. But like that idea that these things can pop up in the middle of a normal mission to complicate your day, like I said, some people might hate that because they just want to do what they signed up for. But it really can spice up the gameplay a lot.
Yeah, and I think as well, sort of for solo players in particular, just keeping with them, sort of. I often ask myself, like, why are you playing? Well, I don't ask myself. I get asked sometimes in comments, so why would solo players play a MMO? Go play Squadron 42. That's what you're waiting for, solo player. And I'm like, no. So people might play these games solo, but I think sort of the majority of them probably still want human interactions.
Yeah.
You know, they still want to be in a world with other human beings. They just don't necessarily want to be in an org with them, on a multi-crew ship with them. That's absolutely fine. That's cool.
Yeah.
But like, this is a reason to have not org level interactions with people, but just, you know, you broke down, somebody came and rescued you.
Yeah.
You know, you got some gameplay with another person. They helped you out. Maybe they robbed you. Maybe they didn't. you know, but it was exciting because you didn't know at the point where they pulled up whether they were going to rob you. You know, it's these interactions that we realistically should be playing MMORPGs for.
They will have really succeeded if players are getting into this game and asking for a refuel or restocking or repair out in space and are second guessing whether or not it's a player or an NPC that showed up to help them.
Yeah.
That would be the pinnacle, I think, of like an immersive experience with the AI working and players also working on the same systems and doing the same things no matter where you are. But that's crazy. We'll see if that ever happens. Let's go back to big ships real quick. We've talked a lot about how this will kind of lessen the amount of solo playability with these ships. It makes these ships a little bit more vulnerable in the sense that you have to pay more attention to their systems and stuff. But is this also a good thing? Like, is this a good or a bad thing for big ships? Are there benefits to the fact that they're now getting engineering built in?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good thing. Because it also creates sort of multiple roles within while you're all working to the same purpose. So like, I know people who don't have any interest in combat whatsoever, which will probably come as a wild shock to the PvP community, that, you know, somebody could not like shooting guns. But there are people who have no interest in that. And so this provides a non-combat role for somebody to get involved in combat. You know, the orcs taking out a big ship. So they don't go as a turret gunner or as a pilot. They might go as an engineer. So it's bringing in more types of gameplay for people who are interested in different aspects.
Yeah.
Which I think is really good. And I think it's probably on these big ships that the engineering gameplay is going to feel probably the most intense if you don't have... Yeah, if you've got two capital ships wailing on each other, the difference between who wins and who loses might well be who brought the better engineering team. You know, putting out the fires, like if, if we're talking about sort of time to kill being a completely different kettle of fish, then yeah, you know, one team has a really good engineering team, the other team's ship is completely ablaze with multiple fires in multiple multiple areas, and gradually they run out of oxygen. So
that's a crappy way to die. You don't even die from the fire.
We didn't even waste the size 10 railgun on you. Yeah. Oof. So I think that's gonna be pretty huge.
That is a good benefit. But as far as the actual function of the ship, like, do you think this, we started this conversation out talking about how currently if you took out a hammerhead, it'd be like taking out a Vanguard, right? But let's say you take out a hammerhead and an equivalent being like five arrows, I don't know. But what's going to convince people, given this engineering system now, besides the idea of getting more gameplay for people, what's going to convince people to use that hammerhead instead of the five fighters?
I think it's sort of that's really got to be addressed in terms of where the relative power lies. And I think relative power right now, because right now things are just, it comes down to a couple of numbers. You know, what's your total DPS output? What's your range? What's your HP pool? You know, shields plus hull. But in the future, that hammerhead just might not get scratched by the size 2 guns on the fighters. Similarly, sort of they're talking about sort of with the changes to gimbals and auto gimbals, turrets being just more effective than they are now. And with that, you might also have the added complexity of the engineering gameplay and therefore require more crew. But also you've probably got more chance for things to go wrong. So there's more survivability in the big ship. Yeah, you had to bring an engineering team, but they were able to fix the problems which went wrong. Whereas when your arrow got a power plant destroyed, you're just adrift.
Yeah. So that there's a lot more redundancy.
Yeah.
With the bigger ship is. And we've seen that too in the designs. If you could lose certain fuses and still be able to power your ship. So that is a good point. Like, you're extending your lifetime quite a bit. You're increasing the amount of eyes that can cover things like damage, and maybe your weapons stop working, or maybe you have to reload your ballistics or something. Mm-hmm. There's some intuitive benefits to being on a larger ship. I like that, at least in terms of combat.
And we mentioned as well, sort of in terms of the star systems, so it's one that lulls you into a false sense of security. Things about SE is that we currently tootle around in Stanton. And, you know, I flew from one side of Stanton to the other today, and then I had to refuel my Cutlass, which I did at one of the many space stations. And then I could fly straight back all the way across the system if I wanted to, with an XL1 fastest drive, I could fit in that slot. So you know, it's there's no real inconvenience to it. Whereas, you know, one of the things which will stop you bringing your five fighters in the future is your five fighters will still be traveling to the fight when it's long and over.
Yeah. You're also, you have lower stats, you have less fuel, you have less storage.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are quite a few reasons.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, that comes into things with, like, industry, exploration. You know, range will probably be one of the really big restricting factors mm-hmm. on smaller ships.
There's also the aspect of power we haven't really touched on. Is you have to balance the power to each turret, light, life support. Everything in your ship uses power, and you either have to use your power plant or a battery with, you know, that's been charged to keep those things powered. And the manager has to decide what's getting what power. That's a pretty big one, because, like,
yeah,
you could have 50 different slots where you could put power supply, but you might only have 25 available power slots, you know? So you have to pick, is that mm-hmm. going to be mostly shields, mostly power, mostly thrusters, mostly... It's like the power balance we do right now with the triangle, but in a much more varied sense. That, yeah, like, want an engineer for that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is sort of, if they get this right, this is where it ends up sitting right, you know, that it's not necessarily an absolute must-have, or it's something which you can just shimmy people who are doing other roles into engineering in a pinch, in an emergency.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you could approach it like that, or you could approach it as, we have an absolutely dedicated engineering crew on board our ship who this is their main gameplay loop and they love it and they know everything about it.
Yeah.
But the sacrifice we pay for that is that, you know, we obviously have to take more crew on board our ship, and more of our crew might be sat around playing, you know, chess or whatever other games they give us.
And you got to pay them for that time.
A longer time, and yeah, they still have to get a paycheck from whatever we've mined or won or whatever. So
yeah, it's definitely going to mix things up. It's just a lot of implications to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very exciting, and the coolest part is that it's not mandatory. You don't have to do this. You don't have to take part in it. You could always just get your stuff repaired at stations. Keep those power supplies at the default. And you basically just run the game by default. You can do it in Star Wars Squadrons. You can do it in No Man's Sky. You can do it in Starfield. Every space game allows you to either dip more into this kind of gameplay or just keep it as default. And this is just a bigger scale version of that. But I really like where it's going.
Yeah, certainly. I would agree.
I have one more question for you before we get going. And this one is about the overall gameplay that we're seeing come into the game. So I'm thinking the heat system that'll keep us using VTOLs and atmospheric, or the heat system and control surfaces that keep us using VTOLs and keep us moving and make sure we're not like just kind of sitting around doing nothing. The weather systems that are supposed to blow us down, the maelstrom system, damage, engineering, all of these things they're kind of bringing into the game that take the main thing everyone's been doing for years, which is just flying ships around like they're all just different sized boxes of the same ship, and starting to specialize it all more. Do you think that piloting ships is going to become more of a rarity for people? Like we're going to see more and more people who just either aren't comfortable enough piloting ships to do it or just straight up don't want to?
So yes would be my one word answer. But it's a podcast, so we'll try for a bit. We'll try for a bit more of that.
We're good.
All done. I think to a degree that already does happen. There are some people who, like I know from my own org, who will take any opportunity not to fly. I'll be honest. Sometimes I'm one of them. Sometimes I do just like getting flown around. It's quite relaxing to get into the co-pilot seat of a Connie and just sit out a journey. But that's more due to laziness. Whereas some people, you know, they're much more comfortable being a turret gunner, or they, you know, they love things like the FPS element of Star Citizen and really aren't bothered by the spaceships at all. Spaceships are just a car that gets them from A to B, and point B is another point to go and shoot bad guys with their assault rifle. So there's plenty of people, and I think as the game expands and there's more roles in it, then I think it will probably decrease. Probably everybody will still have a car, a spaceship that gets them around, but like there are people nowadays who really love driving and do it as a hobby as well as using it to get to work, and then there are other people who just drive to get to the places they need to be. And then there are people who don't drive at all and just take the bus or the train, you know. So I think that'll happen in SE, and more as we get more roles in, when we get things like base building in, I'm pretty sure there are people who will just be like, well, I live on my space farm out on the, you know, the third moon of this system.
Yeah, they kind of have been starting to talk more about localized gameplay and emphasizing the idea that people are meant to stick around planets or planetary systems for longer than we expect right now. Like, you're not supposed to be flying from Stanton to Microtech or from Hurston to Microtech four times a day. It's it's too much flying. They need more gameplay around, and that would really really help, I think, not just give people who don't want to fly more gameplay, but just keep people sticking around. Do you think it's bad that the game starts to push people out of flying? Like, they make it too difficult?
No, I think it's, I think as long as it's a, so that's one thing which I would say about all of these things. Like, I think the the floor to getting into any particular role does always need to be low enough. Like, and I think that's where they just need to remember they're making a game, and that it's meant to be fun and it's meant to be accessible. So I like things which are they have a low skill floor, so you can get into them and you can get competent fairly quickly, but that still have a skill ceiling which is relatively high. So to get really good at something, you do have to practice it and become skilled in it. That is always, of course, going to be a challenge for game designers everywhere. That's sort of the holy grail, isn't it? To design something that's accessible but also has a high skill ceiling.
And to try and do that with 12 different game systems in something like this.
Yeah. So I'd hate it if it was kind of like, you know, players basically said, I don't fly anywhere in Star Citizen because it's too hard. Because I don't know, you know, because I have to have a manual and I have to have attended 20 hours of mandatory training and done a test to get my pilot's license to take off. Hour. Like, you know, it's sort of like you still need it to be something that somebody can get into. But if the reason people aren't flying is because there are just areas of the game that they find more fun, and that's because there's plenty of different roles to do, sort of on a ship or off a ship, then that's great. Like, yeah.
All right. I'll take that. I can't wait to see how it turns out. We're going to see engineering for the first time in Alpha 323 probably next week, I would say. It seems as the is when we're looking at if everything goes smoothly. And hopefully it's live in-game later this year. It's going to be a big change. It's going to start to introduce a lot more complex gameplay with capital ships coming in. And it's definitely something that we'll be talking about again in the future, probably on this, probably on Citizen Central, and probably on the stream. So thank you all for coming. And Loud Guns, you specifically, thank you so much for joining me today.
I was excited
for this talk. This is one of my top three parts of the game, and I'm so pumped to see it's finally coming in. Any last thoughts on the system from yourself? Like, you know, gripes or things that you might want to see, or things you want to see other people asking about in the comments about the system?
I think it'd just be interesting to see who's actually excited to be an engineer. So I think it might surprise the people who think that this is a terrible idea and aren't looking forward to it at all. So that there are people out there who've already got their engineer hat at the ready.
They've got their Discord roles.
Yeah.
And before you go, can you let folks know where they can find your own content?
Loud Guns here on YouTube and on Twitch, although I haven't really been doing too much of the latter recently. One bedroom flats, not the best thing to Twitch stream in. So
be like that. Yeah, go check out the channel. Very good stuff, great tutorials, guides, and information on the gameplay development. Hope you all enjoyed this episode. This is a video on YouTube, of course, but if you are so inclined to skip out on ads, audio platform is ad free, supported by our supporters who are also here live with us. Hey y'all, thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks again for coming and watching us rabble on about a game system that's not in game yet, but hopefully soon. I'll catch y'all next week.